This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR.
Listening to live and on-demand shows has never been easier on MPR. All you have to do is go to the App Store or Play Store on your device and search up Access Internet Radio NZ. Select and download the first option at the top of the list. Once you've downloaded the app, the next step is to open the app and look for MPR. Once found, select it and then browse freely. Supported by New Zealand On Air.
Are you a midlifer and feel it is finally your turn? Spent your years up until now taking care of everybody else's needs. Feel invisible when you have so much more to offer society. Then welcome to the Middlelicious Podcast, the podcast where we talk about how to live a delicious and magnificent midlife with your host, Nikki G, coach, author, speaker, and Middlelicious midlifer. Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Middlelicious Podcast. I'm Nikki G, your host, and today I feel very honoured because we've got someone who is really has expertise in her area, which is Lisa Dudson. How are you, Lisa?
I'm wonderful. Thanks, Nikki.
That's good to talk to you. Now, you've just come back from an amazing trip, but I'll ask you about that a bit later because we have to talk about it. But one of the things I always ask guests to do is tell me a bit about you and how you got to be doing what you're doing.
Well, gosh, where do you start? Well, I'm from Palmerston North, and I grew up there and went to uni there. And I guess the abbreviated version is I spent 7 years overseas working and travelling. And the time that I was working, I worked in IT in sales and marketing and came back to New Zealand, I think in my late 20s, and worked in sales and marketing and IT again. And then basically sort of had a chance dinner was someone who used to work in the financial services industry. And to cut a longer story short, I ended up deciding very quickly to join the financial services industry. And that's the industry that I've been working in for the last 2 decades. And I guess for me, it was really turning into a hobby into a career, because I'd always been interested in finance. I bought my first shares when I was 16, and my first rental property when I was 24. And I had 3 jobs, and I was at high school, and I worked full-time while I was full-time at uni. So, you know, it's my whole sort of world really and my whole life has been very much focused on developing the freedom to choose in my life. And to be able to do that has been, you know, how do I build my own personal wealth to give me that flexibility?
There are so many things I love about that story. One of the things is to buy your first shares at 16. Did you have someone in your life that was into shares, so they encouraged you to do that, or was it something you decided to do off your own back?
Kind of, sort of. You know, like I come from a very blue-collar family. You know, we you know, didn't grow up with a lot of money, and, you know, my mother worked part-time, my father worked in the trades. But he had a couple of shares, and he bought me a book on the New Zealand share market for my 16th birthday. And I guess at that point in time, you know, I'd been working, gosh, I don't know how old I was when I first started working, but I always had part-time jobs from a very, very young age and worked all through intermediate and all through high school. So I guess he was always a part of me around how do I actually, you know, create money. So he bought me this book on the New Zealand stock market. And so I bought my first shares while I was still 16, and I bought $5,000 worth of shares in 1986, so right before the 1987 share market crash. So yeah, it wasn't a great time to start, but great lessons. And look, you know, I had no clue what I was doing. I'd buy the Manawatu Evening Standard on a Saturday, and, you know, they'd have all the stock prices in there, and I would have a little exercise book, and I would put all the prices in, and I'd graph what was happening to my shares. And, you know, did I know what I was doing? Absolutely not. But I guess it's, you know, it was that activity and that interest and that awareness started off, you know, a journey.
Oh, and I just think that's amazing. You know, it's really interesting when I think about, you know, a parent that has the knowledge or the intelligence to give a child on their 16th birthday a book about the New Zealand share market. Because when I think about the way I was raised about money, you know, we always have the poverty mentality in the house. I always heard things like there's never enough money and money doesn't grow on trees. And I always remember my mother, you know, if anyone ever made any money, she would say, oh, they're obviously selling drugs, you know. So her idea was the only way people could make money was to do something bad. And I must admit, it's taken me to midlife to unpack that and realize that it was actually all BS. And you know, I think over the last 3 years, I've really worked on educating myself about money. And the more I learn about money, the more fascinating I find it. And I just love it that you, you know, what a lovely gift to give you as a, because you think about what the average 16-year-old gets. It's sure as hell not a book about the share market.
No, and look, I don't think my father knew a hell of a lot about the share market at the time, but I think I come from a very hard working family. Yeah. I was the first person, you know, in all of our family for generations to ever go to university. But everyone's always worked hard. So, you know, I've always worked long hours. I'd worked before high school, after high school, you know, on the weekends as well. And I think for me too, there's something about me that I don't like rules a huge amount. I don't like being contained. So, you know, this drive to have a life where I could choose what I wanted to do, combined with, you know, the sort of hardworking gene that I got from both of my parents, I guess sort of propelled me into the space of, you know, how do I keep with my money so I can actually develop that lifestyle I want, where I'm not, someone's not dictating to me what they want me to do. And that's something I get a real bee in my bonnet when someone tells me, you know, what they think I should be doing. I tend to rebel against it quite heavily.
So you and I are both midlifers. I'm pretty sure you're a midlifer. I seem to remember when I talked to you the first time, you're a midlifer. How many people do you think in our generation, particularly women, understand money at all, let alone to the level you do?
Well, I mean, I suppose I've got a good understanding of money, but I think there's also an important thing to note that there's a difference between understanding money and understanding investments. And I think one of the challenges that we tend to have is that we make things a lot more complicated than what it needs to be, because it's not necessarily that challenging to go, how much have I got coming in each week and how much am I spending? It's not difficult to walk around a supermarket and go, okay, well, you know, to find things on special and cut coupons. And that's not complicated. It may be hard from the perspective that you've got to put some effort into, but it's not, I don't think you have to have any degrees or, you know, specific education and money to be able to know how to do that. When you're talking about investing, like investing in property or the share market, that's something different again. But so much of getting ahead financially is just, you know, finding a gap between what you earn and what you spend and doing something reasonably constructive with it.
It's also too, though, I totally agree with you, Lisa, but it's also too having the discipline, and that's where people fall down.
We have
this era now where people are told you can have everything you want, so they spend like that's the truth. And I read somewhere recently about the alarming credit card debt that the average Kiwi has. I mean, 3 years ago now, I got rid of my credit card because I just didn't have good credit card behavior. So I thought, right, get rid of it. And it's one of the most freeing things I've ever done. Because it means I don't have personal debt, and that I really like, because I don't have to. And also, when I think about the interest I paid over credit cards over the year, that's just frightening. That's just frightening. And that's
Absolutely. And I think that's what I mean. That's why it's not complex in some ways, but it's hard because it requires discipline.
Yes, and that's where people fall down. And I think too, money, especially spending, comes with a lot of emotional stuff, doesn't it? You know, I was talking to my daughter yesterday, it was about food. You know, she said, I eat when I'm bored, I eat when I'm depressed, and I eat when I don't think there's anything better to do. And I think a lot of people use spending the same. They spend when they're
bored. Absolutely they do. Yep.
You go into town on the weekend and the malls are full of people shopping. I'm like, why do you need to? I can't stand shopping. That works for me, I have to say. If you said to me, do you want to come shopping for a day in Wellington, I'd say, no, I'm not interested at all. But a lot of people, shopping's their hobby.
Well, that's right. And I think, you know, I have a lot of sort of single women professional clients who earn good incomes, but they also spend a lot because they work hard and they go, you know, I deserve.
Yes.
And therefore, you know, they have massages and, you know, designer clothes and all the rest of it. And so, you know, what I try to work with them to do is to go, okay, well, usually that behavior is driven by the fact that, you know, I'm bored, I'm lonely, I want to make myself feel better, basically, is fundamentally the issue. So it's kind of, well, what are five other things that you can do to make yourself feel good that don't involve you going out and putting money on your credit card? And that can be quite effective for people as well.
I think that's wonderful advice. But also those words, I deserve it. You know, I deserve it. To me, my logic now would be that I also deserve to have a retirement where I have choice. you know, yes, so absolutely. I might be able to have the massage. Because the thing is, too, as you know, and everyone knows, especially now we're in midlife, you know, life can change in a heartbeat. You can have a well-paid job, but my God, that can disappear overnight. And suddenly you're in a completely different position. I read somewhere that I think 85% of Americans can't access $1,000 in an emergency, and about 45% of Kiwis. That's only $1,000.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, and to me, that's really frightening. And I guess the conversation I'm often having with people is around, you know, you say that you don't want to save money because you want to have the choices to do what you want to do with it today. But I'm trying to say to you, you know, be a little bit more balanced in your approach so you've got choices all through your life. Because if you don't put some money aside today, you won't have any choices down the track. And that can look really rough because you might be in a position where your health fails you or the age that you're in, you just can't get any extra income. So, you know, you need to be thinking about choices throughout your life, not just choices today.
Yeah, we rob future us, don't we, to feed today us. I remember hearing someone saying that. I thought that's quite powerful. We do rob future us all the time. Do you find in relationships in our age, especially long-term relationships, because I think the traditional thing that is changing with generations, but I find a lot of women in my age group who are in long-term marriages, they look after the everyday household stuff, and hubby tends to look after the investment stuff, and often they're completely ignorant to what they've actually got. Is that a common thing, or do I just hang out with people that's common with?
No, I think that's probably true. You know, traditionally, women deal with the household day-to-day and men tend to deal with the investment stuff. And I think, you know, when I see younger people coming through, they tend to be more involved together with their decisions. And it's certainly something that I encourage with everyone that I see is about communication. And it's part of the reason it switches a lot of women off, because guys go and talk about, like, you know, they try to sort of, I guess, buff themselves up a wee bit and kind of make themselves appear that they actually know a lot more than they probably do. And sometimes their wives feel a little bit inadequate and tend to switch off. And so that's something that I've often addressed, is like, how do you together build your financial future? How do you together work on your finances? And one may do more of one thing than the other, but you're still having conversations and you're still learning and to be absolutely on that journey together. Because if you're not on that journey together, you know, one of the leading causes of relationship breakup is lack of communication and issues around money, and often the communications around money. So if you don't get on the same page financially, you know, you could be heading for the divorce course, which is going to halve your net worth. So, you know, these conversations and about money and getting involved together is just absolutely, you know, it's so critical.
I think too, I listened to a podcast recently and they had a guy on, he wrote a book called I Can Make You Rich. He was really interesting to listen to. But one of the things he talked about was prenups. And they are such an ugly thing. People don't like them. Yet to me, in midlife, they are absolutely essential. I know that they're thinking of changing the relationship laws so that what you had when you went in, you're entitled to take away, which I absolutely believe. But how important do you think prenups are? I mean, especially if you've been, you know, I was talking to a friend the other day and she said, you know, I've had my wealth halved twice. There's no way I'd go into a relationship without one now. But you see women my age go into relationships and they don't even have the conversation.
Yeah, and I think that's the interesting thing, right? Because, you know, prenups are, I think, prudent from the perspective of, you know, if a relationship falls apart, then you're not going to lose, you know, a bunch of your wealth, particularly if you're the one that had most of the wealth in the first place. But I think more importantly and most interestingly is the conversation that you have to get to the prenup.
Yes.
And so if you can't have that conversation about money and you're going into a long-term relationship, what is that telling you? And I think that's telling you that you don't have a particularly good relationship if you can't have conversations about money. So I think it's kind of twofold, the purposes of prenups.
Also, too, it could be an alarm bell that maybe, especially if there's one person who's significantly better off, that maybe the reasons, I mean, the cynic in me says, what are the reasons for going into that relationship? If you're trying to say, well, I don't want that conversation, conversation. And I agree, those conversations, I always talk when I'm with clients about preventative conversations. You know, what do you need to have a conversation about to prevent disaster happening? But money is an interesting topic, isn't it, Lisa? There's a theory that people would rather talk about their sex life than their financial life because...
Oh, look, absolutely. And interestingly, on that point, I met a psychiatrist years ago, my psychotherapist, and working out of Australia, and he used to run a lot of, you know, group sessions, and a lot of it around sex and, you know, issues, quite serious issues for people. And he said, you know, they'll talk about the drugs they did and the sex that they had with strangers and all sorts of stuff to make your hair curl. But he said, you ask them about their income, no one would say anything.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? I've just read Brené Brown's book on shame, and I realized for me, that's where I carry a lot of my shame is money, you know, because I haven't done wise things with money in the past and I've struggled to make a great income, but acknowledging it was huge. And that's why 3 years ago I was given a gift when my husband said to me, your problem, Nick, is you don't know anything about money. So I have gone out of my way to learn about it. But there's also, it's so secret. You know, if you say to people, what do you earn? What's your income? They won't tell you. They just won't say anything. It's like it's more personal than everything else.
But well, it's a measurement of success for a lot of people. That's
exactly what it is. And that's what I realize about myself. So I'm shifting that because it is, I mean, money's important. And I think, too, do you think it's partly because there's such an anti-wealth mentality in New Zealand? You know, we don't have, we kind of look at people who create wealth and they're very up for criticism and we begrudge them. So therefore, it's not, people don't want to be honest about, you know, that I'm actually doing okay. You know, the boat I've got hidden somewhere else in the country because I don't want you to see it. Do you think that's part of it?
It's that judgment, isn't it? Yeah. It's about keeping up with the Joneses, because people always come up to me and ask me, you know, how many properties I have and all the rest of it. And I don't tell people. And it's not because I'm concerned about them knowing necessarily about what I earn or what my financial position is. It's just that I, you know, it's the judgment that goes with it that I can't be bothered with. And I don't think, you know, because I also think you can have lots of conversations without money without actually declaring what your net worth is. You can talk about how you think about it and the sort of things that you do. And, you know, I often talk about when I'm running seminars, you know, like I'm very aware of every dollar that I spent. And I think it's, again, it's those simple things. Because if I go to the supermarket and I'm thinking, oh, I'll make chicken for dinner tonight and chicken breasts are $30 a kilo, or $25 a kilo, I'll change the recipe.
Because
to me, I can't, you know, I can't get my head around paying $30 a kilo for chicken breasts. But I'll go and spend God knows how many tens of thousands of dollars a year in travel because that's something that I'm passionate about. But it's that awareness about money and about how do you do things differently.
Yeah. I think Ramit Sethi, who I listened to on this podcast, talked about dialing up, dialing down. So dialing up the things you really love, which for you is travel, but do that by dialing down on the things that are not important to you. So if eating out, for example, my husband hates eating out, so therefore we have virtually no budget for eating out because he just doesn't enjoy it, so there's no point. But it means we can put money elsewhere. So I think it's understanding that, you know, sacrifice needs to be made. Sure, you can spend money on that new $500 blouse that you've just discovered, but that means that maybe you can't do it somewhere, like put it in an investment, or do you think?
Well, and that's exactly right. And I talk about the same concept of high sacrifice versus low sacrifice. Yeah. And, you know, for me, travel is, you know, something that I'm passionate about. I've always spent a lot of money on travel, but then, you know, I'm careful about a whole bunch of other things. And I use Grab One and I use First Table. And, you know, money's, I'm fortunate, I'm in a very strong financial position, but we still use things like that because I'd rather go, okay, we'll use First Table, we'll save $50. Well, that goes into my travel fund.
Yeah. Yeah. How many people do you think are out there? I think there's a saying, you know, don't use money you don't have to buy things you don't need to impress people that don't care. Do you think, from where I see it, that's a bit of a malaise of modern day living, and social media has probably made that worse, that we all, well, when I say we all, I don't, and I'm sure you don't, but we all want to look like we are wealthy, that we are.
Well, and that's exactly right, isn't it? Because it's, you know, it's that impression thing. And we look at social media and we always see the people on holiday and going out for nice dinners and, you know, but really it's just, you know, it's such a false economy because, you know, you can just waste so much money on a whole bunch of crap that doesn't actually have any value. But I think the other challenge we have today is that we're all running around on the hamster wheel. You know, life is fast paste. And so much of what we do spend is to make our lives easier. You know, take away food because we're home too late to be bothered to cook, or, you know, we're zooming around the supermarket at 100 miles an hour, so we just pick the closest things rather than actually looking and going, well, that's a dollar cheaper than that one there for the same thing. So I think the busyness of our life doesn't help us today.
I agree. And I remember reading an article years ago about the cost of working mothers, and they put up, you know, the cost of childcare, the cost of convenience meal, because working mothers are often exhausted and all that stuff. And they were on the back foot. I guess a lot of them do it, one, for their own sanity, because being at home with kids all day, having done it, is, you know, can be quite challenging. But also, two, is to just try and keep their career on track. You know, that if you take, because there's also interesting research around women who take years out of their career, that it does put them behind. So there's that side of it too, that we're trying to balance that have it all scenario, which is bullshit anyway, but that's what we're trying to live. So what are the mistakes you most commonly see? So, you know, when people hit midlife, what are the mistakes they've made that have put them into a bit of a financial malaise in midlife?
Well, I think firstly it's about not paying attention, and you know, following that is wasting money on things that don't actually have any value for you. I think another thing is that we make it a lot more complicated than what it needs to be, because if you just, again, paid attention and were more aware and saved more money, and even if you put it into the bank, you know, or paid your mortgage off faster, that would still be, you know, a great step ahead from spending it all. And then I guess the third really key thing is about not getting any advice. I mean, I had a session with a lady last week, and she's, you know, in the mid-50s and, you know, doesn't have a lot, has very little, doesn't have in her own home. And she said to me, like, it's been really hard to come to you because I feel so embarrassed. Yeah. So ashamed of where I am because I haven't been good with my money. And, you know, and I'm like, well, let's just not worry about it. And, you know, she's like, she's asking me about all these investment strategies. And I said, the only thing I want you to do right now is get a gap between what you earn and what you spend, become more aware, get a better system and save money. And when you've actually got a pot of money, then we'll have a conversation about investing it, because at this point in time, we don't need to make it complicated.
And I think that's such good advice. Do you think it's getting harder, particularly in a place like Auckland, where house prices are crazy? Do you think it's getting harder to create that gap between what you earn and what you spend?
I think it's choices, you know, like, I mean, it's, you know, interest rates are 4%.
Yeah,
you know, like, I bought my first house at 12%. You know, my parents bought their first house at 21%.
Yes, I can,
you know,
remember
so
that.
It's like, whilst the house prices have got a high dollar figure on them, you know, you could argue that affordability is better today because interest rates are low and likely to stay low. But I think there's a lot of distractions. You know, my first house, I mean, nothing was new. You know, I bought, you know, went to the, again, mandatory evening standard, found a bed, you know, secondhand, found furniture secondhand, went round to everyone I knew and said, hey, have you got a spare pot or a spare plate? You know, and that's kind of how I finished my first house. Well, a lot of young people today wouldn't even think about, you know, finishing their first house like that. So, you know, in some ways it is harder because we're busier, but on the other hand, you know, we're just, there's so much convenience today.
I think your observation is so accurate. You know, it astounds me how many people buy or build a new house and completely change their furniture. It's like, wow, that must add 20, 30, 40K to the, you know, I mean, and my furniture's fine until it breaks down, I'm not going to change it. But also too, I guess there's the environmental factor. Where does all this shit go that people throw out? And it's just,
absolutely.
But it's almost like, I mean, it's even with babies, you know, I see young people having babies and so many of them have to have everything new. Whereas I had to, you know, I had a secondhand cot and a secondhand bassinet. And so there's a whole, do you think it comes from that I deserve it mentality?
Oh, I think so. I think it's busyness. I think it's I deserve. It's a bit of turn your nose up at things that are secondhand. It's probably a combination of things. It's, you know, some ways it's a nicer experience to go into Harvey Norman on the weekend and go, that's a nice couch, than to troll through 4,500 of them on Trade Me.
That's true. I don't do either. So, you know, I must admit, if we needed a new couch, I'd probably go new, but it's, we've got a leather one, unfortunately. My husband bought an ugly brown leather couch, and I think, Lisa, it's going to last for centuries.
Centuries. Good thing, again, it's not putting in in landfill. So, yeah. I just think so much about money is just keeping it simple, being aware, paying attention. You know, it's interesting because most of us don't consciously spend our money. No. It's our unconscious habits that spend our money for us. So one of the key things I'm always trying to teach people is to go pay attention, pause before you buy something. You know, do you really need it? Can you get better value somewhere else? And if you pause and be more attentive, you will over time naturally start making better decisions with your money. And then when you start having a bit of extra money and you don't have a mortgage to pay, for instance, you don't know what to do, then go and get some advice.
Yeah, I have a 24-hour rule. You know, if I see something, think, oh, that's nice, whether it be online or whether it be in the shops, you know, and I find 9 times out of 10, I don't end up buying something because that 24-hour gap, I just say, I don't actually need this. You know, why am I buying this? And it's very powerful. I've used that for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I do the similar sort of thing. And I think it's, again, that's not a complex investment strategy. No. It reiterate enough about how these simple things make such a difference over time.
But it also requires discipline, Lisa, and that's what we have discovered that, you know, it's interesting you talked about unconscious habits. People, we talk about that with eating, that people are completely unconscious of what they eat, which is why part of the reason we've got, you know, major health issues coming our way because people don't take notice of what they put in their mouth. So people don't take notice of what they put in their mouth. People don't take notice of what they're spending. So I guess the question one has to ask is, what the hell are they taking notice of? If they're not, are they just not present? Is that the problem? Are they just not present?
I don't think so. I think, again, it's just like, oh, God, you know, it's 7 o'clock, I've got to eat, just zoom into the supermarket on the way home and just run around 100 miles an hour. I think it's just not paying attention. And I think it's important to have goals. See, I've always had goals. You know, I was always saving for something. And, you know, because if I say to my corporate clients who spend easily, some of them would spend $120 a day on coffees, you know, lunches, breakfast, you know, they just eat out all week. And I say to them, well, take your lunch. And they go, oh, yeah, whatever, Lisa, you know, talk to the hand. But if I say to them, okay, well, if you could actually only, you know, buy your lunch once a week and take it the rest of the week and you had $5,000 in your bank account at the end of the year that you could buy your Harley with or you could pay off your mortgage or take your family to Fiji with and not have to put on the credit card, suddenly their motivation changes to pay attention and take their lunch.
Yeah, fascinating, isn't it? So you put it in a way that they go, oh. So, but that fascinates me that people who are, you know, in high-end jobs, earning well, can't make that connection because it's not rocket science.
You know, again, it's just so far down their list of priorities because, you know, I've got clients who earn $500,000 a year, you know, but they spend $500,000 a year because they've got kids in private schools, they live in the nice parts of, you know, of Auckland, you know, they're just, you know, everything's new, everything's designer, you know, and it just, you know, that when they go out for dinner, they just go to the nice restaurants. They don't grab one. Who's that, you know?
Yeah.
And so the money just goes, you know, and again, it's just a lot of it's just not thinking. And then they get caught in the trap of earning the money and they think, oh, well, I'm always going to earn the money. I'm on great income. Why should I worry?
Yeah. Yeah. And then something happens and something changes, you know, and because I think one of the great things about being on my journey the last few years is now I feel more than ready to earn a really good income because I know with all my heart that I would not waste it, that I would build wealth because I've learned about money. I think sometimes we give people big incomes long before they're ready to get them. Because, you know, $500,000 a year, that's a hell of a lot of money in your bank account every fortnight. So the first time you get it, you must go, wow, and it would be easy to go out on a spend. Listen, we're running out of time, so I'm going to ask you to come back. So I will sign off and I'll get you back, okay. Lisa. Is that okay?
Yeah, no, that's totally fine. I mean, you know, like you, probably I can talk about money for quite a long period of time. So quite happy to do that.
Fantastic. So you've been listening to the Middlelicious podcast with my guest, Lisa Dudson, and we've been having a fascinating conversation about money. So you can find me on www.middlelicious.com. Have a Middlelicious week.
Support this program and others like it by giving a donation to NPR. More details at npr.nz.